Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Manko. From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Right now.
Yes, we are back. We won't bore you with the details of why we've been gone so long. Just be glad that the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast is back on the air. Or is it on the web? Anyway, I'm Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo blog. And with me in the Playa Vista podcasting room is your favorite FC Yahoo blogger, Shahan Ahmed. Shahan, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Favorite? I don't know.
I just want to get a reaction out of the other guys.
I'm scared of what Leander will say now.
I am just trolling the other bloggers. Look, it's been a long time. It's been I think the last time we sat down in front of microphones and talked soccer was before the season began with our season preview show. I was not here. I was in Brazil covering the Olympics, but our former intern, now blogger for college basketball and soccer, Henry Bushnell, did a great job putting that together with you guys. So it's been a long time. And we are over halfway through this Premier League season. And for this first episode of 2017, we're going to take a deep look at the title race in England by examining each of the contenders, the six contenders, but also by revisiting our preseason prediction for each team. But I just want you to, if you can describe in one word what this season's been like, or what you've seen to encapsulate what you've seen so far from this season, what would be the word to describe it?
The same word I'd use to describe Mike Dean: box office.
it's been entertaining. Look, having to go through that holiday period, it was like Premier League Palooza from New Year's Eve all the way until this past Wednesday. We are taping this, by the way, on January 6th, 2 days after Spurs beat Chelsea 2-0 on two really great Dele Alli headers. So we're here at a break with the Premier League. It's the FA Cup weekend coming up, but we will not talk about FA Cup. But yeah, it's been an entertaining season. It has not gone. It hasn't been by chalk, if there was anything that we can resembling chalk for this title race.
We'll see. I mean, we'll go back and look at our predictions, and I mean, the orders might be a little switched, but we have the top six matching up from the quick peek that I took, and we'll get into it. But it hasn't gone quite to chalk. But I mean, this isn't a Leicester season, right? There's no 5,000-1 about to win the Premier League. So more than not, I think that this season has delivered pretty darn good quality. And you know, we're talking about the festive period. Festive period is when all the La Liga fans and Serie A fans, my fellow Serie A brethren, don't have a choice but to watch the Premier League.
You're the only one that carries that flag on our crew, by the way. Alex Baker, maybe.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, people that I know that watch those leagues, they've been watching the Premier League and really enjoyed it, because this season, you know, over the festive period, everybody's forced to watch it. And this season, more than others, you know, we had a couple of really standout fixtures, including the Tottenham game, which we'll get definitely into. I mean, that was the result of the season thus far.
My favorite game so far has been Swansea 5-4 over Palace. And this is not because I'm pro Bob Bradley in any way. That was just an insane game where, you know, goals were scored. I think three goals were scored in like the last, you know,
in stoppage time.
Yes. Yeah. It was nuts. But let's enough about the team struggling to stay up. With our review of the Premier League title race, we're going to start from where the table is right now with the order of teams, starting from the top. And that means Chelsea in first place with 49 points. We had them picked third in our preseason predictions. And so this is what we're going to do. We've gone through what we thought, what we knew about each team before the season began. And then we're going to reveal something, what we didn't know from the first half of the Premier League season. So starting with Chelsea. What we knew about the Blues before the season began was that N'Golo Kanté would make an immediate impact, but Antonio Conte would need time to resurrect Chelsea to title-contending status. Now, Shahan, what we didn't know about the Blues was...
that the 3-4-3 would be just unstoppable and that David Luiz would be arguably the best defender in the Premier League.
It's stunning. It's stunning, especially about David Luiz.
Yeah. I mean, that 3-4-3 doesn't really work without him, right? He is the key to making that Chelsea defense go from being in shambles last year to being, you know, right there next to Tottenham as the best defense in the league. It is stunning. Like, David Luiz was laughed out of the Premier League when he left. He was laughed out of Brazil in the World Cup. And now he comes back to the Premier League, and people are going, scratching their head, going, what are they doing bringing him back? And now, you know, a little bit past half a season, you're going, wow, this guy could genuinely be the best defender in the entire league.
Well, how has Conte made that work? Because, you know, David Luiz is always, at least for one or every other game, just classic, just, you know, defensive blunder that you just can't believe. And now he is just solid beyond belief. I mean, what is...
I think for me, it's pretty simple. He gave him the freedom to move around as that last man, that sweeper. But at the same time, he put that responsibility solely on his shoulders. Normally, Luiz is playing, you know, as one half of the central defender combo. There's no second half. It's on him. So because of that, I don't think you see him just be like, screw it, my partner is going to handle this. It's like, no, he realizes...
It is all on him.
It's on me. I can't let this go. And he's been incredible. I mean, the balls he wins in the air, the way that he plays it out, everything about him, you know, he's always had the talent. No one's ever doubted David Luiz's talent. It's the matter. It's the fact that mentally, he's really seemed to put it all together. And, you know, it took them... Without him, that 3-4-3 doesn't work, which Chelsea at some point is probably going to miss David Luiz for a red card or injury, suspension. Something's going to happen at some point, and I'm really curious to see how Conte sets up without Luiz, because there's no one else on that team, in my opinion, that can play that last man position even half as good as he can. You can't bring John Terry back in.
No,
frankly, John Terry is probably on his way out.
I don't think Gary Cahill can manage that spot either.
Who do you go with? I mean, there. And so I think, you know, as we talk about possible hurdles for Chelsea between now and the end of the season, because Premier League season, there are going to be a few times where you slip up, no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the main slip up whenever that happens. And if it's an extended period of time that Luiz is out, I think you might see them completely abandon the system for a little bit of time. And really, Chelsea wasn't that good until they fell into the system. So I think that's where we're at some point going to come across. But yeah, the biggest shock slash, you know, most incredible thing about this season for me, and the reason that Chelsea are top, is because David Luiz has really transformed the league by playing the last man in a 3-4-3.
He deserves a lot of credit. Antonio Conte deserves all the credit, but let's not ignore what's, you know, the revitalization of Diego Costa and Eden Hazard, who were...
Revitalization is one word.
Well, I mean, these guys care, which is, I think, Antonio Conte has been able to create, you know, Rory Smith in the New York Times had a great story about what Conte has done to turn things around. He's created this family atmosphere. But it's one thing to create a family atmosphere. It's another thing to get guys to play for you and play like they actually care. And we saw last season what happens when you embarrass, criticize Eden Hazard, who's very sensitive publicly in the press. He's going to sulk. He's not going to play for you. And that's what really, in the end, doomed Jose Mourinho. How has Conte been able to get these guys to play again? I mean, to play to the level of world-class level.
These guys aren't bad players, right? 2 years ago, Hazard was the PFA Player of the Year. Diego Costa was scoring goals. They were championship side. They won the title. They fell off a cliff last year because they kind of just seemed like they were over their manager. And Mourinho has a habit of doing that. He kind of overpresses his players. He is kind of more of a get in the media and criticize your players, call them out a little bit more than most any other manager. Most managers will protect their players. Mourinho, to his credit, early in the season, gave Hazard pretty much free license to play wherever the heck he wanted. He tried to make... Going into the season, he was comparing him to Messi and Ronaldo. I mean, people forget, Mourinho was not one of those guys that was like, I'm going to completely... This guy's trash. He was trying to put him up and bring him up, and Hazard did not respond on the pitch. And then after that, when, you know, when Mourinho gets back to the corner, he starts taking shots at everyone.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's his MO. It always has been. And last year, yeah, he went after the guys that weren't performing for him after he put his trust in them. And, you know, he lost his job because of that. As much as it was taking shots at them, it was also because they didn't perform. He didn't put them in situations to fail. They failed. And then he got the brunt of the blame for it, as, you know, every manager will. Like, managers get blamed. Players, you get a new voice and you kind of bounce back. I'm not sure if it was because Mourinho had overplayed these guys and they were kind of just worn out mentally, physically, both. But I think having a new voice, coming across a new system, having gone through that type of failure and that type of criticism, I think there's a little bit extra motivation to step up and really prove your talent and your value. And these guys are immensely talented players. I mean, Diego Costa didn't come over from Spain as some like second rate striker. This guy was a Champions League level striker. They won the last season he was in La Liga. They edged out Barcelona, Atletico Madrid did, and won the league. That doesn't happen very often. Atletico Madrid does not win the La Liga very often.
If there's one thing, Chelsea's in first right now, but if there's one thing that's going to be the downfall for Chelsea, you think it's going to be?
I said, David Luiz potentially, for whatever reason, going down or getting hurt, because I think they are built from the back. It's a Conte side, right?
Yeah.
And you know, Conte, I mean with the C, not with the K, although the K also plays a big role in this. I think that defensively is where they really stand out. I think, yes, they score goals, and you have to score goals to win games. That goes without saying. But I think that the way they're able to shut down teams, they get 1-0s, you know? And as a championship side, when you're not playing well, you need to be able to keep a clean sheet, and Courtois has been much better this year. He's been really good. And I think that really David Luiz would force them to re-examine everything they've been doing that's been working this season, and especially on that 13-match run. That was all, you know, Luiz and a 3-4-3 that really brought Chelsea through.
In the transfer window, the chatter has been, the talk has been that Chelsea really needs cover for the wingbacks, you know, Marcos Alonso and Victor Moses on the right. There's talk of getting from Wolfsburg, Ricardo Rodriguez to cover on the left. But the one thing that's going for Chelsea is that they're not in Europe. This fixture congestion is not going to be a reason why they don't win. That's why I think Chelsea, at the very least, and also their running is really good. They play some bottom feeder teams going on the final month of the season. So it's going to be set up for them, really. But as you said, every team suffers a down period, and Chelsea has yet to experience that.
Yeah, they really have. They've been the class of the Premier League. They're 5 points clear at this point after 20 rounds, which isn't a huge margin. But when you really look at it, this team has everything set up. Their players are playing the right way. They have the right manager. They're built from the back up. They're set up to win the Premier League. Picking anyone else right now to win the Premier League, you're probably going to get pretty good returns if you were by a bookie or in Vegas. But in reality, you know, the Premier League's very fickle, and you can fall down a couple rounds. If they lose a couple rounds, all of a sudden Liverpool could be on top of them. But you know, we'll get to Liverpool next, and I still think right now you can't really pick anyone over Chelsea. They're legitimate challengers. There's some illegitimate challengers, but Chelsea is the favorite, clear and away.
Let's move on to Liverpool, which is second in the Premier League table right now with 44 points. We had them picked for six, and this is what we knew about the Reds going into the season. Well, this is what we wrote anyway in our team preview, that the Reds would play exciting, attacking football under Jurgen Klopp, but they would struggle to keep clean sheets no matter who was in goal. Now, Shahan, what we didn't know about this Liverpool team is
that they, in the top six and playing head-to-head, that they would have the best record. When they play the big games, Liverpool shows up. And, you know, their only downfall seems to be the odd 2-2 with Sunderland after they beat City. You know, the City game was so convincing, and they looked they looked like they were able to morph into a defensive side to hold a 1-0 lead, which is not what you think about with Liverpool. But the ability to do that was so impressive. And you were saying, okay, this team might actually be better than we thought. We thought they were a one-dimensional attacking team that really presses high up the pitch, gets the ball, immediately runs in on goal, scores on you. And then the next time you get the ball in the back, you're scared. Uh-oh, I made a bad pass. They did it again. All of a sudden, they've scored, you know, 3 goals in 10 minutes. And that's it's scary. They are the scariest side in the Premier League on that front. But for them to be able to shut it down defensively, I mean, you know, they've made some astute signings. Ragnar Klavan, Joel Matip. They've brought in some good guys. You know, Karius hasn't worked out in terms of goalies so far, and I'm not sure he will. I'm not sure that it's going to...
I wouldn't hold your breath over
that. Yeah, exactly. But still, you can see what Jurgen Klopp was trying to do there. I think, you know, Sadio Mane exemplifies that role of pressing the ball and interlinking with the other forwards. Even though he's technically a midfielder, like interlinking with them and really putting the pressure on the back four immediately before they're, you know, when they're on their back feet, frankly, and when they're on their heels. And I think that is actually going to be the most difficult, this upcoming period where Mane is out to the Africa Cup of Nations, even if Coutinho comes back. To me, I just think that Mane presses high up the pitch better than anyone else. Sorry, Jordan Henderson. Mane is better at pressing up the pitch. And him being out, even if Coutinho comes back, I think Firmino does a good job of it as well. But I think they really will suffer. This upcoming period, and I believe while he's gone, they could potentially be actually facing Chelsea too. They need to keep it together. They need to keep the ship going because they, like Chelsea, benefit from the fact that they're not playing in Europe. They get to sit back and plan out every single week in the Premier League. And then on top of that, they have shown that their style is built to play once a week. It's not, you know, I think that's kind of what happened with Sunderland is they kind of just ran out of legs.
Yeah.
Because they're built to really, really press you and work really, really hard. They might not even be able to do it for 90 minutes straight, but they'll do it for enough of the 90 that they'll get the edge. And they are the best attacking team in the Premier League. I mean, you know, 48 goals in 20 games. That's insane.
How do you explain, though, they're still, you know, can still fall victim to just playing loose in the back? I mean, is that just, it takes time for that partnership to grow and mature?
So you look at Klopp, right? And if you look at the Dortmund team he had, he was very lucky to have Mats Hummels and Nevan Subotic.
Yeah.
Like if he had those guys at Liverpool, they'd be a great back four. It's, you know, it's his style has always been more of the get you up the pitch. It's more about scoring goals and playing actually attractive football, which Liverpool has historically been known for. So he's a great fit for that club and the way he plays. And you know what? They're competing and they're going to play their style, and it's a fun, heavy metal football style. It kind of causes chaos up the pitch, which is great to watch. I don't think that they're ever going to be built from the back up. I just don't. If they get a couple good players in there, great. But I don't think that, you know, it's just they're not going to be like Man United. They're not going to be like the Jose Man United. They're not going to be like the Conte Chelsea. It's the manager's personality a little bit.
You know what's interesting about this team is that the manager's personality is so crucial to Liverpool's success. There really isn't a leader on the field per se. Everything comes from Klopp. His energy drives that team. You know, if he is to the point where he will turn around and yell at when they're at Anfield to get the fans into the game. Everything comes from. I've never seen anything like this before. In my time watching, you know, the Premier League, one guy who has so much control can dictate and has so much power to drive a club to success. Now, Jose Mourinho was one thing, but he was not a raving lunatic on the touchline trying to get the fans to start, you know, to get behind their team when they're down.
He's not breaking his glasses every other game, right? Well, if you think about it, you know, if you really think back to the old Kop where there were no seats and it was just kind of like a roving crowd of madness, it reminds you a lot of that yellow wall you see at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And
very much so.
And that's where Klopp comes from. I mean, yes, he comes from Mainz if you go back further, but the culture that he's carried forward, that he's brought over to Liverpool or brought back to Liverpool in a lot of ways, is that Dortmund culture of being just the crowd is really a huge part of the game. If your crowd isn't into it, the guys on the field just don't seem to react and play at the same level, which is why, you know, they are one of the two teams that are undefeated at home. It's them and Tottenham, and you know Tottenham will be next on our list. But
nice segue there. Let's move on to Spurs, who are in third place with 42 points. We are, according to our preseason predictions, they're going to finish fifth. So what we knew about Tottenham before the season began was that Tottenham would be emboldened by the Premier League's best defense. What we didn't know was
that they would still be able to hang with all the big money spending and the big managers coming in. I mean, Tottenham hasn't changed. That's really the thing that's what separates them from the other five in the top six. And then at the same time, when you look at it, you're like, yeah, why wouldn't they be up there? They were, you know, arguably the best team in the Premier League last year. And when you say that, everyone's like, well, Leicester. It's like, well, Leicester kind of had that magical run where Jamie Vardy scored every single game. Tottenham, on the balance of the entire season, was the best team. Most people, even at the last few weeks, when it looked like, you know, when it looked like Leicester had it in the bag, you look at Tottenham and say, that's probably the best team in the Premier League right there. They're the most solid team. They were the best defense last year. They have the best defense so far this year, you know, narrowly edging out Chelsea after beating them 2-0. I think that what we have to really take into account is how little Tottenham have changed from last year and how they've just allowed their squad to grow. And Pochettino is just such a good manager that, you know, okay, let's give credit to Wanyama was a good signing, right? He played a huge role and we saw it. But when you look at their record last year, they ended up with 35 goals allowed. They gave up 5 goals in the last season when half their squad seemingly was suspended. And they weren't playing for anything. They gave up a couple goals the week before. They gave up a couple of goals against Chelsea in that 2-2 draw that effectively ended the season. The 7 goals in the last 2 games, 9 goals in the last 3 games, that doesn't speak to how good of a defense they really had last year. They were the best defense in the league. That's one of the reasons where you looked at them and said, okay, these guys are the best team in the league because they wouldn't really be beaten by anyone. Now, when you get into this season, you weren't quite sure how the rest of the teams around them would really improve and whether Tottenham would get pushed down because of the other teams. But as the seasons progress and as we get into, you know, the new year, you look and it's like, wow, they're the team that was up on Chelsea, ended up losing at Stamford Bridge. Then they form into a 3-4-3, match Chelsea's formation that's been dominating the league.
Which is surprising and stunning.
And beat Chelsea at their own game. They beat Chelsea at their own game playing their style of football. And not just beat them, they completely, like to be honest, like Dembele and Wanyama were incredible in that game. And, you know, Dele Alli got 2 goals in the exact same way. There was another point in that match. And, you know, rewind the tape, go back and watch it again, where Eriksen gets the ball and you see Ali raise his hand on the back post because it's open again. And instead, this time, Eriksen decided to take a shot and Karamzov comes right back out. But if he'd hit Ali on the back post, that's a hat trick in the exact same way, just broke down Chelsea.
I think the only question mark for Spurs is where are the goals going to come from? And you saw in that Chelsea game, they paid so much attention to Harry Kane that it did leave guys like Eriksen space. And most importantly, guys like Dele Alli to be free in the box. Now, if they're going to step up their game, in addition to what you expect Harry Kane to do, it's looking like a Premier League, well, more than title contender. I mean, they could actually win it.
Yeah, no, I you know, I wrote a couple columns this last week and really singled out Liverpool and Tottenham on why they should be both taken very seriously for the title, not to be in the title race, because they're in the title race. That goes without saying right now. You're in second and third and within, you know, touching distance. But these two teams, for different reasons, are really Chelsea's biggest threats. It's not Arsenal right now. It's not Jose and Pep. It is really Liverpool because they have the best attack and they only play once a week. And Tottenham because when you look at it, they really have a very deep young squad that kind of got robbed last year. It took 5,000-1 odds for them really to kind of fall out of that one.
Leicester fans, you know. If,
hey, I
you should take offense.
I love Leicester. Don't get me wrong. I was there for their first match of the season. I went to the King Power. It was incredible. But that being said, I think that when you look at Tottenham this season, it's a reminder of how good this team and how close this team was to last year to winning it last year. I mean, they really. I feel like they've matured slightly, and you know, you see with Dele Alli, you even see with Harry Kane, and you know, we're talking about their first team, but they got guys like Lamella. Heung-min Song's been good for them. They have got, you know, Janssen was one of their signings that hasn't really even had a chance to get in there or do anything. He's a young player, but all the same, they have guys that are 2-3 deep at every position. And then, you know, Danny Rose has really seemed like he's come into his own this year. Kyle Walker's been pretty good consistently. He's got so much pace.
And they get the best center back pairing in the league, right?
Yeah, they do. And then, you know, Eric Dier, just his ability to kind of be plugged in all over the place.
Yep.
You have a team that's just so solid on so many different levels, and then you match that up with the fact that the manager is so tactically advanced. The fact that he could pull that off of Chelsea was just a reminder, like, hey, you guys can talk about Jose and Pep all you want in the papers. Like, Spurs may be the least sexy of the top six sides, but they might be they genuinely might be the biggest threat and the most legitimate threat to Chelsea.
Let's talk about Pep Guardiola and his Manchester City, who currently sit fourth in the Premier League table with 42 points. Now, according to our preseason predictions, this would be a Premier League champion. We see the citizens finishing first on the strength that, you know, this is what we knew going in about City, was that the Pep factor and the rebuilding going on with Chelsea and United would be really the key reasons why City would make a run to the title. But what we didn't know about City was
that Pep would turn into Jose at some point. I mean, the stuff he's been doing in the media is just silly.
It's insane.
I mean, okay, I get this, okay? At some point, there was a giant fall. Before he went on his sabbatical, he had that moment where, remember that press conference where he basically, like, cursed out and said, you know, is he the jefe? Like, referring to Mourinho, and kind of had that little breakdown. At the end of his Bayern tenure, he seemed to kind of lose it with the medical staff and kind of carried over a little bit into the media as well. This is the start of Pep in the Premier League. He's
totally pulling a Mourinho.
He's completely losing his mind, and he just got here. Like, it makes me wonder. You know, he was talking about, you know, how much longer will I last here type of thing. And then he backtracked, obviously, one match later, and he wins. But the fact that he gave those bizarre interviews to every outlet in the same manner, where he was just kind of like pouting like a little, it's so not what you think of Pep. But at the same time, I think we've kind of just kind of given him a pass in a lot of ways. And it's because he plays this exciting, wonderful football. And every club he goes to, he transforms and kind of makes them into a Barcelona type of team where they play these wonderful passing moves. And we're so distracted by the actual football that every now and then we kind of ignore the fact that he's a bit of a lunatic.
Well, let's look at how take a look at how they have been playing. I mean, well, how the season has gone. They went on this great run to start the season, and then they started having issues. You know, mostly defensively, when teams start pressing them, you know, high in their own end, they don't have a back line, or they don't have guys in the back who can handle that pressing. And he wants them to play it out of the back. What happens is horrific giveaways or balls to nowhere, you know, playing passes to nowhere. So how do you rectify that? How do you, that's the Pep way. That's the way he wants them to play it out of the back.
And you know what? Claudio Bravo looks so terrible at this point. And it's not necessarily because he's a bad goalkeeper. I don't think he is. It's that he plays that way, and he's being told to play that way even more than he naturally does. I don't think Otamendi is a particularly good passer or dribbler of the ball. They kind of need David Luiz of all players.
Is this mic working? What did you say?
Well, I mean, they need defenders who can really pick out a pass and really, you know, be composed. He doesn't have Gerard Piqué and Mascherano back there, you know? Generally, Pep is known for kind of taking defensive midfielders or midfielders in general who are pretty good on the ball, not great. They're not, like, you know, they're not real midfielders, but They can tackle and they can be comfortable on the ball. And he hasn't really done that, and I'm not sure if he's going to buy someone to do that. But to me, I just think that I think Man City has struggled, but we should really take a step back and notice that they've still won four of their last five Premier League games, including beating Arsenal. Yes, they lost the biggest game for them of the festive period. That loss kind of sticks with you because it was against Liverpool. They weren't necessarily abject as much as they let in a goal early on a Wijnaldum header, which you would not have bet on. You know, it was a heck of a play and heck of a header, but that's not what anyone had when they were coming into the game thinking that Wijnaldum's 1-0 header is going to be the difference. And then, you know, City wasn't bad in the second half. They could not unlock Liverpool's defense, which, again, I think that was tactically astute on Klopp's part to kind of morph into something that no one expected, including Pep. And City kind of ran out of ideas. You could say that Aguero wasn't fully sharp because it was his first game back from his suspension. You know, four matches is a long time to sit out. But I think that when you look at City, I think they need to buy. And I think they need to buy in a few different areas. I think that Gundogan injury really hurt them. I think that, you know, I think Yaya's a good player still and can have an impact.
Which is shocking that he's actually playing.
It's shocking.
It took an apology by him to get back into good graces. But
I think that what you are kind of noticing is that Yaya's not Gundogan, which is actually what they need, is a slightly more dynamic midfielder who can kind of get more box-to-box. Yaya's sitting back a little bit more because he kind of has to. He's not able to run up and down the field with as much pace and play as quickly as Pep needs in that role. Because, you know, next to Fernandinho, always suspended Fernandinho, you need a little bit more dynamism. You need someone who can really play more of a mid. You know, he needs like a Thiago type of player. He needs a Xabi Alonso type of player. He needs a player that can mix it up going forward and backwards. You know, Alonso's probably a little long in the tooth. You don't probably want to go after him. But Pep, I think they need to buy. And the only reason I say I don't think they need to buy necessarily a striker, I think they need to buy a defender or midfielder, is because I think they got, you know, they have someone coming in from Brazil. They have Sané, who still hasn't quite gotten a regular chance in there. They have attacking talent. Aguero's still there. He missed four matches. He'll be fine as long as he stays healthy. That, you know, Iheanacho's up-and-coming talent as well. I don't think they need to buy up top. I think they have plenty of talent there. I think they need to really fortify that midfield and that defense. I mean, they need, if they want to play that way, they need to go find someone. Even like John Stones is built up as this passing center back, but I think we've seen a lot of holes and a lot of immaturity from him, although I don't think he's been as bad as people make him out to be. But they need another player that kind of fits that type of mold, but with more experience.
Let's move down the top six to fifth place, Arsenal, with 41 points. Our prediction was that we see them finishing fourth at the end of the season. This is what we thought. This is what we knew about the Gunners going into the season, was that they would play, you know, the prettiest football in the Premier League and qualify for the Champions League. Doing it with the hashtag Wenger out, you know, trending now and then. What we didn't know about the Gunners was
that the biggest talk of the season would be Alexis Sanchez's contract and possibly moving to China. I mean, China has been an X factor this season like no one imagined. You know, the way they've been pulling talent, and January right now is probably going to ramp up as being a scary period for a lot of clubs, because you could see big names hopping on over, and there's a lot of money waiting there for you. You know,
you're not expecting Alexis to get up and leave, do you?
I'm not expecting it, but there's been a lot of unexpected things happening in terms of people going to China. So I'm not expecting him to necessarily get up and leave.
He would be the biggest signing so far for China. I mean, so far they've had, you know, the Carlos Tevez's, the Paulinho's, the Ezequiel Levezzi's, the Graziano Pele's. You know, they were able to...
The Hulks, the Oscars.
Yeah, Oscars and, you know, John Obi Mikel's.
Yeah.
But that'd be quite a coup if they can get... That's landscape altering for the Premier League if they're able to procure.
I don't think Arsenal would sell him. Even if he wanted to go, I don't think they would sell him. Although you'd imagine if he doesn't sign his contract and that offer is anywhere near even half as much as they were supposedly offering for Ronaldo, you'd be like, from a business standpoint, any business standpoint, you'd kind of be an idiot not to sell him.
I think the issue is the long-term happiness of Alexis. Now, everyone's making a big deal out of his outburst at the end of the game the other day, where they, you know, they still came back and salvaged the point, but he obviously was not happy with the result. And, you know, everyone is pointing to possibly him moving on. I mean, how much do you put into stock of him not just leaving for China, but him leaving Arsenal?
I don't think you can take it lightly. I mean, you know, there have been rumors of him potentially going to City. As long as he doesn't sign that contract, I don't think you can put it past him leaving. And, you know, I think in the past, Wenger's hesitated but been forced to sell players over to City in particular. You know, if Pep is calling for him and they want him in there, then, and he wants to go and he doesn't sign a contract, it's basically, hey, we can have a rental player for a year, or we can cash out big with him leaving. That's why I don't even put, you know, China on the side. I mean, if a club gets enough of an offer, you have every right to send the player as long as he's going to actually go. You know, it's, personally, you know, the talk has always been, or this season has been, if they can only keep one, or the rumor is they can only keep either Ozil or Alexis. I don't think that's even a question. I take Alexis over Ozil every day of the week.
I would too.
The way that he fights, the way that he plays. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for Ozil. He's a World Cup winner, but he's a luxury player. Alexis is a player that will genuinely be the heart and the engine that drives the team and drives the attack in particular, right? The way that he works out there, it inspires people around. And if it doesn't, you kind of look at everybody else and say, why aren't you inspired?
You know what Alexis has become when Wenger was having him lead the line? It reminds me of Liverpool's run a couple of years ago where, you know, nothing was going right. And all of a sudden, Luis Suarez would just, you know, Gerrard gets a lot of love of his leadership, but he wasn't even really that much of a factor. Was Luis Suarez was inspiring that team. He was making things happen. And that's what I see from Alexis. And I don't see really much. I mean, other than your Olivier Giroud scorpion kicks, there really isn't a whole lot happening from the attacking side, at least when it comes to putting the ball in the net. I mean, Ozil has been somewhat of a, you know, invisible, really.
Yeah, well, I'll step in with our colleague Alex Baker, who tweeted this out, and I haven't checked the validity, but I'll trust him. And he said that Giroud scores or assists every 49 minutes, which is the best for any player in any of Europe's top five leagues.
Now you need to reveal what's the read into the stat. I mean, he's coming off the bench, so it's not like
he was coming off the bench and scoring pretty regularly earlier. He didn't come off the bench now. And when you really look at Arsenal's best run in the season, it was when Giroud was out and Alexis was playing up the middle. And he was really, you know, that's when Arsenal kind of looked like, hey, they'd gotten over this hurdle of not having these type of Sunderland results. And then now you have Giroud back starting in at the top of the attack. I mean, he's been productive, and I don't hate on him as much as I think that Arsenal's kind of gotten to that point where they need to try and play a different style. And I think that the player that they have that fits that style, just a little tweak, is putting Alexis up top. And, you know, there's another player that I saw that, according to Bild, which is a German magazine, and they tend to put out rumors all the time, but we'll just say this one somewhat. They said that Javier Hernandez, Chicharito, as you maybe have heard of him, is available for 25 million euros to anybody who wants him. If that number is even close to right in the ballpark, I think he would be an incredible fit for Arsenal. His style, the way he runs, if you put that type of energy and that type of running, you know, a guy who runs behind defenses, I think you can put Alexis on the outside and not even think twice about it. Because I think that the problem with Giroud isn't so much that he doesn't score, He misses a lot of chances, yes, but it's not that he doesn't score goals or even spectacular random back heels or put headers in. You know, he scored an important goal at the start of stoppage time. That saved them a point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you have a guy like Hernandez, it kind of matches Alexis's energy in attack. And I think that's something that Arsenal often is missing when Giroud is in the team, is the lack of energy more than necessarily the lack of quality.
Last question on well, last topic of what we're going to hit on Arsenal is if they do turn things around and really make a run for the title, what's it going to be?
Well, I'll
other than other than bringing in, you know, help through the transfer window.
Well, I want to just respond by that and say, okay, they've only won two of their last five games, right? And they got that draw. So they dropped 2 points where they should have really beat Bournemouth, right? They're only 1 point back of City and Tottenham. If they'd gotten those two extra points that they should have gotten, they'd be in third place, 1 point back of Liverpool. The top, you know, from position two down to position six, there's a 5 point gap. None of these teams are like out of it.
No one is.
Like, that's the thing about the league this year. I mean, Chelsea has a 5 point gap, like lead over Liverpool, and you would say that they are comfortably ahead, but really not that comfortably. They're just ahead. Everybody else, you know, to get back into it isn't really a question. They're all in it. Everybody's in it for top four. Everybody's frankly in, even United, 10 points back. They're in it for the title. You know, that you say the amount they've won their last five. They're on the best run along with Tottenham right now. You would say, actually, I think better. I think they've won 8 in a row across all competitions. United is playing some of the best football. So nobody in that top six is out of it. Beyond that, there's a gap. You know, like Everton, sorry, Ronald Koeman, it's not, you're not going to win the league.
We're not including Everton.
Yeah, you're not going to go in the top six. But I think United on up, everybody's in play. And for Arsenal, it's just really going to come down to beating the big boys when they face them, playing what's in front of you, not dropping points against Bournemouth, which isn't something that Arsenal is prone to doing. It's, you know, they just have to, they have to make the most out of Alexis. If they're going to continue to play Giroud, which I think they are, personally, I think they should look into that stat and use him as a super sub. It seemed to be working when they were doing it earlier, and there's no shame in that. Ask Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if he minds being a super sub and winning trophies. You'd rather win trophies than not win trophies. If Giroud pouts and gets upset, like, so be it. You want to win games.
My favorite super sub was Pippo Inzaghi, by the way, when I was watching Serie A back then. So let's talk about, you know, last but not least, Man United. They're in sixth place currently in the table at 39 points. We have them picked for second. This is what we knew about United going into the season, that it would take Jose Mourinho a season to shape the Red Devils into a title contender, one that was aligned with his philosophy. But what we didn't know about this team was...
Well, before I even answer that, I just want to share...
Oh, you're going to preface?
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm going to preface and say I actually picked United to win the league.
You did. Hey, I'm going to go back and look at what you actually said. I think you said, would you ever go... why would you bet against Jose and Zlatan? That was your last line on...
Yeah, and okay, so... To follow up, what we didn't expect was that Jose and Henrik Mkhitaryan in particular would take this long to adjust. Because United, like I said, have been, you know, one of the best teams, if not the best team for December. They've won 8 in a row across all competitions. They're playing much better football. Paul Pogba seems to, you know, really be coming into his own now. Mkhitaryan has finally gotten a good run of games, shown why everybody who watched the Bundesliga for the last couple of years was like, how is this guy not playing? You need to play him all the time. But, you know, beyond that, Zlatan's come back into his own. He had that early flurry of goals, and now he's, you know, responded by scoring again and scoring often. And Jose seems to have resettled after kind of going through a little bit of a panic mode and kind of getting a little crazy in the middle. He seems to be back
It looked like year three was happening in year one for him.
Oh yeah, it was definitely like
he was losing his mind.
There was a dumpster fire about to just ignite. he was sitting there with a match, just waiting to light the house on fire and just watch it go up in flames. And I think somebody came over and basically took the matchbox away, let him like breathe. And that someone may very well have been Michael Carrick of all people.
But quietly, United has gone on this run, and Jose he's figured out a couple of things. One, you know, how to make use of Pogba. Like I still don't know if he's ever going to live up to that outrageously. You know, he's the world's most expensive player, but you know, he's getting something out of him. He's figured out the back line. Now they have this center back partnership for the last couple of games. Have to go back and see how often they've used it. But Phil Jones is back playing with Marcos Rojo, who I never felt was going to be really a factor as a fullback, but they've been able to make use of him as a center back. Half of the solution in the back in the center back pairing. Now, is this enough? Are we seeing the makings? You mentioned that they're 10 points back. Is this leading to something big this season, or is this all just something to lead to next season? Because they are 10 points back.
10 points is a lot to make up, right? And Chelsea's going to have to help out everybody in order for there to be a legitimate title race and for United to be included in that. Marcos Rojo, or as I call him, Marcus Red Card, because Rojo translates to red for anyone who doesn't know. The guy, he gets away with two-footed challenges every other week, if not every week. And someone needs to tell this guy to stop doing it because he's going to kill his team. Phil Jones has been kind of an injury case for a few years now. So can they rely on it? I'm not entirely sure, but I think Eric Bailly, who's out to the Africa Cup of Nations, he'll be back. So they kind of just need to hold water until then.
Mm-hmm.
I think that beyond that, though, I think it's more about up the pitch. I think they've really found a good vibe and good rhythm, and it has to do a lot with, a guy that I've been a bit of a fan of for a while is the guy that doesn't get talked about when you're talking about United's young stars is Jesse Lingard, and he seems to also be getting a regular run in the team because he's one of those guys that does a lot of little things that add up, and he runs a lot.
He's kind of a throwback to what the guys that would play for Sir Alex, right?
Yeah.
You're right. Who do all this running and doing all the little little things, all the dirty work that leads to 3 points.
Exactly. And as much as Martial and even Rashford are guys that their talents are undeniable for me, I think that Lingard is one of those guys where you're like, hey, he's not a luxury player, but he's a guy that we kind of need in the team, especially when you have a guy like Zlatan who can't necessarily at 35 press the ball or really, put that type of impetus on defenders in the opposite half. I think having Lingard, and he's a guy who's just willing to do a lot of stuff that other guys on this team aren't. And, I think Jose has done a pretty darn good job considering the start of this season was all kind of building up to slowly phase out Wayne Rooney. And he hasn't entirely phased him out. Some injuries have helped assisted Jose a little bit here and there. And I think Mkhitaryan kind of coming along slowly didn't help him at all. But I think, Mkhitaryan in particular, coming into his own and really securing a spot has helped. It's really helped. And I don't think that's going away. That's something where his quality is here to stay. And that's beyond Jose's tenure, probably. That's beyond this season. I'm not sure that they'll get it back into this title race. I think that they're a legitimate threat to Arsenal for the top four, to Man City for the top four, Tottenham and Liverpool too, because I don't think you can take any of those five teams out of it. United will be in that top four race, if not easily in front of it. If they continue on the trend that they're going, I mean, I had them finishing first, right? It took them, they started off strong, and then they kind of fell off, especially after that City defeat. Now they seem to have regained that mojo. They have the talent. If they continue to actually play, I don't think they've peaked yet. And I think if they continue to play, the question with Chelsea is, did they peak too early, right? And that can happen. With United, I think that they have a lot of ground to gain still. I think they can improve immensely. And as long as Zlatan is still scoring goals at 35.
Yeah, do you think he can keep it up, though, at 35? I mean, it's incredible what he's been able to do. And the guy never gets hurt.
Well, last year, right, 2016, the year that Zlatan turned 35, he ended up 2 goals shy of Messi for the most goals for any player for the calendar year. Anyone who doesn't think Zlatan belongs in the same breath as, you know, or maybe just a slight breath behind Messi and Ronaldo in this recent era that we've just experienced, you're kidding yourselves. This guy has been a goal-scoring machine. A machine. Everywhere he's gone. You know, his record for the longest time was anywhere he played, he won the league. Every single season. I think it got broken finally when he ended up going back to Milan. But it was legitimately, I think it was like an 8 or 9 year run where he just won the league, no matter what team, where Juve, Milan, wherever, Barcelona even. He got blamed a lot for that schism he had with Pep. I don't put that entirely on him. That was more on Pep catering to Messi, if you really go back and look at it. Zlatan, actually, his numbers for Barca weren't bad. He performed. He just, him and Pep had a falling out because Pep realized that he had Messi on his team and wanted to play Messi up the middle, even though he just bought Zlatan and given up Eto'o to do so. Zlatan's been has been arguably the best goal scorer every single year, going back since really he moved over from came into his own at Juve, and moved over from Ajax. I don't think that anyone should discount the quality this guy has. It's just, yes, the age will catch up to him at some point, but right now I think his skill. He's a black belt. He knows where he's kicking the ball every time.
Are you teeing me up for this comment for addressing his critics the other day? If you missed that quote, he said at the end of his interview, "I make them eat their parts of their bodies." You can take a guess what it is.
I think he was talking about soccer balls.
Yeah, it was size 5 or size 4, size 3. I don't know. Look, it's we got to wrap this up. This is our It's great to be back to get this FC Yahoo podcast back on track. Please, you can read all of our insights on what's happening in the world of soccer at the FC Yahoo blog on the Yahoo Sports soccer page. And it's been a while, so it's like,
yeah, it won't be anymore. I think we'll have these out pretty regularly. Should anyway.
Fantastic. For Shahan Ahmed, I'm Joe Lago. This has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.